Imagine you have just strapped into a spacecraft for the first time. You have spent years in the Air Force, maybe done a stint at test pilot school, flown everything from trainers to fighters to heavy transport aircraft. You know cockpits the way a musician knows their instrument. You know which panel the circuit breakers live on. You know the click of a well-made toggle switch. You know how to reach for the right control without looking, because the muscle memory is burned in from thousands of hours. Now you're looking at three large touch screens and almost nothing else. That was the moment facing Bob Behnken and Doug Hurley on May 30, 2020, when SpaceX's Demo 2 mission launched from Kennedy Space Center and put Americans back in space on an American rocket for the first time in 9 years. I'm Vector on Clear Direct. This is Radio Hangar, and today I want to go deep on what that cockpit represents, why the design choices behind it matter to anyone who flies anything with wings or rotors, and what the converging paths of space and aviation mean for the future of human-machine interface in flight. Before we get into it, this segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last. AviationSoul.com. Let's break this down, starting with what's actually inside that spacecraft. The Crew Dragon flight deck has two crew seats positioned side by side, and in front of each seat, three large touchscreen panels arranged in a wide arc. The left display handles vehicle systems management, showing propulsion, power, thermal, life support, and communication status. The center display is the primary situational awareness screen, showing orbital trajectory, rendezvous parameters, and the spacecraft's orientation in space. The right display handles crew inputs, navigation planning, and mission-specific operations. There are physical controls, but they are deliberately minimal. Emergency abort handles are physical. Which makes sense because you do not want to navigate a menu tree when you need to get off the rocket. Manual attitude control joysticks fold out from the sides of the seats. But everything else runs through glass. To understand why this is remarkable, you have to understand what came before. The Space Shuttle Orbiter's forward flight deck had over 2,000 switches, circuit breakers, and instruments. 2,000. Every system on that vehicle had physical controls mapped to a specific location on a specific panel. You learned the cockpit the way you learn the streets of a new city panel by panel, switch by switch, until your hands moved there without conscious direction. In an emergency, the physical location of the control was part of the solution. You did not look, you reached, and the switch was there. That density was not arbitrary. It reflected an engineering philosophy where physical controls were themselves a form of redundancy. If a computer failed, you could manage systems manually. If a circuit failed, you could see the circuit breaker and reset it with your fingers. The physical interface was a direct connection to the hardware, and the hardware was what you were flying. Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo cockpits were built on the same philosophy, refined through trial and iteration. The Apollo Block 2 cockpit, which flew to the moon, was the result of a massive redesign after the Apollo 1 fire of 1967, and it incorporated hard lessons about what pilots needed to actually do their jobs in a crisis. SpaceX looked at that history and asked a fundamentally different question. They asked, is the complexity of those cockpits a requirement of flying in space, or is it a requirement of managing the specific systems those spacecraft were built around? If you redesign the systems themselves to be software-managed and self-monitoring, does the cockpit still need to be a map of the spacecraft's wiring diagram? The answer they arrived at was no, and in that, they were following a path that aviation had already been walking for two decades. When Garmin introduced the G1000 Integrated Avionics Suite in 2004, it was a genuine revolution in the light piston segment. You went from a traditional six-pack of steam gauges, an artificial horizon, airspeed indicator, altimeter, directional gyro, vertical speed, and turn coordinator, plus a separate engine monitoring cluster, plus a separate radio stack, to a pair of large multifunction displays that organized all of that information in context. The situation was on the left. The details were on the right. Everything you needed was visible simultaneously, and the display could reconfigure to show you what mattered for the phase of flight you were in. The early transition period produced real human factors challenges. Research showed that some pilots moving from traditional instruments had trouble with mode awareness, with tracking exactly what the autopilot was doing, with catching unexpected states before they became problems. Those were not arguments against glass. They were arguments for better training and better human factors design. The industry addressed them, and the G1000 became the standard. SpaceX's approach to the Dragon cockpit faced the same category of challenges, but in a much higher stakes environment. The solutions they developed are where the story gets interesting. The Federal Aviation Administration's counterpart in human spaceflight is NASA's Human Factors Engineering Team, and they did not wave through the Dragon cockpit on first review. The certification process for the Dragon flight deck involved hundreds of hours of crew evaluation in high-fidelity simulators, multiple rounds of design iteration based on crew feedback, and specific testing of critical failure scenarios to verify that crews could manage system anomalies through the touchscreen interface without confusion or dangerous delay. One specific technical problem required novel engineering to solve: capacitive touchscreens do not respond to gloves. Your phone proves this every winter. The Dragon crew wears a full pressure suit with gloves during ascent and entry, which are exactly the phases when you most need your cockpit controls to work reliably. SpaceX designed custom touchscreen surface calibration and glove-specific sensitivity thresholds so that the screens respond accurately to the suit's specific gloves. That is not a small engineering problem. It required new testing methodologies and new standards that did not previously exist in spacecraft design. There was also the vibration problem. During ascent on a Falcon 9, the crew experiences significant vibration from the engines and from aerodynamic loading as the rocket pushes through the lower atmosphere. Touchscreen accuracy under vibration is a known challenge. SpaceX designed and tested the Dragon screens specifically against ascent vibration profiles, verifying that input accuracy remained within acceptable bounds throughout the most dynamically loaded phases of the mission. Both of those solutions have direct applicability to aviation. The glove problem is relevant anywhere pilots wear heavy gloves, from cold weather general aviation operations to helicopter emergency medical services, where crews wear nitrile gloves as standard. The vibration problem is relevant to every cockpit in a helicopter, a turboprop, or a piston twin that has ever wanted to implement a touchscreen interface but faced accuracy questions in cruise flight. Now, let me talk about Boeing, because the comparison is instructive. Boeing's CST-100 Starliner cockpit took a more traditional approach. More physical controls, more switches. The visual language of the Starliner flight deck is closer to what you would find in a modern military jet than in a consumer device. Boeing's philosophy was explicit. Physical controls offer reliability that software cannot fully replicate. A switch does not have latency. It does not require menu navigation. It does not have the failure modes of a touch surface. And under high G loads with a pressure suit in an emergency, a lever you can physically grab has value that is hard to quantify but genuinely real. This is not a wrong philosophy. It is a philosophy that has been validated by millions of flight hours in commercial transport and military aircraft. The Boeing 787 still has physical disconnect handles for its flight control surfaces, physical fire suppression switches, mechanical backup controls. The reason is that software can fail in complex and unexpected ways, and physical hardware cannot be hacked, cannot crash, cannot throw an unexpected exception at 4 in the morning over the Pacific. But here's the honest assessment of what we have seen from Starliner. The vehicle's problems. The software anomalies during early test flights. The propulsion issues on the crewed test that left Butch Wilmore and Suni Williams at the International Space Station for months instead of weeks were not cockpit interface problems. They were deeper software and systems integration problems. Having more physical switches did not prevent them. That is an important data point, even if it is an uncomfortable one for the traditional cockpit design philosophy. Here's what most people miss when they frame this as Dragon versus Starliner. The cockpit interface is a downstream expression of a much deeper organizational philosophy about how you build complex systems. SpaceX builds software first. They iterate quickly, they accept early failures as data inputs, and they rely on software abstraction to manage system complexity. Falcon 9 lands itself on a drone ship in the middle of the ocean. Dragon can dock autonomously with the International Space Station. The human crew in Dragon has authority to override and take manual control, but the software is designed to be capable without them. The cockpit reflects that design intent. It is an interface to a highly capable automated system, and its job is to keep the crew informed and give them control when they need it. Boeing builds with hardware redundancy as the primary safety architecture. Multiple independent channels, physical backups, manual last resorts. This works. It has kept people alive for decades in the most demanding operating environments in the world. The question being asked now by the aviation industry and by NASA is whether this philosophy scales cleanly into an era where software is managing increasing levels of aircraft complexity and autonomy. The data tells an interesting story when you look at a case closer to aviation. The Lockheed Martin F-35 introduced touchscreen heavy panel management when it entered service and experienced significant early usability problems. Pilots reported that in high workload tactical situations, navigating touchscreen menus for certain functions was slower and more error-prone than the traditional button and dial interfaces they had used previously. Lockheed addressed some of those issues through software updates. But the experience reinforced for many in military aviation the argument that touchscreens perform better in stable, low-vibration environments than in the dynamic, high-stress conditions of combat. SpaceX specifically designed around those risks. The Dragon interface reserves touchscreen inputs for non-time-critical operations during high dynamic phases. Critical emergency functions remain physical or are mapped to large, clearly labeled touch zones that are operable under G-load and vibration. The design philosophy was not touchscreens everywhere, but touchscreens where they make the interface cleaner and physical controls where they make the crew safer. That nuance is important. It is also what the aviation industry is converging on. Garmin's approach to touchscreen in their modern avionics is hybrid. The GTN 750C, which is probably in more general aviation cockpits today than any other touchscreen navigator, is a touchscreen interface for non-critical operations, but maintains physical knobs for frequency tuning and direct data entry. The reasoning is that in turbulence, with a physical knob you can brace against the panel and turn with fine motor accuracy even when the airframe is bouncing. With a touchscreen, turbulence is the enemy of precision. The evolution toward more touchscreen integration in commercial transport will continue. Airbus has introduced touchscreen interfaces in their airspace interior management systems, and there are programs underway to bring touchscreen elements into transport category flight decks. The certification framework for these is being shaped right now, and the data coming out of Dragon operations is informing those standards in ways that rarely get talked about outside the standards committees. That feedback loop from space back to aviation is accelerating. As the commercial space industry matures and accumulates operational experience, the certification pathways, the human factors databases, and the design principles that come out of it will increasingly influence how aviation regulators and manufacturers approach the next generation of aircraft. This matters especially for the eVTOL industry, which is building highly automated aircraft with touchscreen-oriented cockpits and ambitious autonomous operation plans. Companies like Archer and Wisk are designing cockpits that look considerably more like the Crew Dragon interface than like a traditional aircraft cockpit. They are making many of the same design choices, facing many of the same human factors challenges, and working through certification frameworks that are still being written. They are not starting from zero. They are standing on what SpaceX and NASA worked out. The human factors question that runs underneath all of this is one that aviation has been wrestling with since the first autopilot appeared on an airliner. That question is, how do you design a highly automated system in a way that keeps the human inside the loop? Proficient and capable, ready to take over when the automation steps back. The most consequential example in the aviation accident record is Air France Flight 447 in June 2009. An Airbus 330 en route from Rio de Janeiro to Paris encountered severe weather over the South Atlantic. The autopilot disconnected due to iced pitot tubes. The crew, suddenly in manual control at cruise altitude in instrument meteorological conditions, lost situational awareness and stalled the aircraft. All 228 people on board were lost. The investigation found that the crew had inadequate recent experience with manual flying at altitude. The automation had been reliable for so long, over so many flights, that the manual skills had quietly atrophied. SpaceX studied this problem. The Dragon interface was designed so that when you switch to manual control, the transition is not jarring. The manual mode presentation is clean. The information you need is immediately visible. The physical manual controls, when deployed, behave intuitively. The design intent was to ensure that a crew transitioning from automated mode to manual mode would not be simultaneously managing an automation failure and trying to decode an unfamiliar interface. Whether they fully succeeded is something we will learn as Dragon accumulates more missions and more edge cases. But the intent was sound, and Behnken and Hurley's feedback after Demo 2 was positive. These were not rookies. Hurley flew 3 shuttle missions. Behnken flew 2. Experienced, skeptical pilots evaluating a fundamentally different cockpit philosophy. Their assessment was that the system logic was clean, the mission phase awareness was good, and they felt genuinely in control throughout the flight. The deeper lesson from the Crew Dragon program is not specifically about touchscreens. It is about what it takes to validate a new human-machine interface philosophy rigorously enough that experienced, demanding pilots trust it with their lives. The answer, from what NASA required and what SpaceX delivered, involves hundreds of hours of simulator testing across a wide range of normal and abnormal scenarios, iterative redesign based on crew feedback rather than engineering assumptions, specific testing in the most physically demanding conditions the interface will encounter, and honest evaluation of where the interface helps and where it creates new risks. That is a framework that applies equally to an eVTOL cockpit, a regional jet flight deck, or the ground control station for an autonomous cargo aircraft. The future of cockpit design is not going to be all touchscreen or all physical. It is going to be a principled engineering process that asks, for each function, what interface modality best serves the crew in the conditions they will actually face. Dragon did not answer that question definitively for aviation. It demonstrated that asking the question rigorously and being willing to redesign when the data says the first answer was wrong leads to something pilots can trust. My sources for this segment include Ars Technica Space Reporting, NASA's Human Factors Engineering Guidance Documents, SpaceX's published documentation on the Crew Dragon flight system, the BEA investigation report on Air France 447, and coverage from Aviation Week and Space Technology. There is more at RadioHangar.com. I'm Vector, cleared direct. Fly safe.